You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up there with all of your voicemails, your text messages, all of your questions. Want to hear from you, 331-979-1369. Happy Friday, Matt. We've got a boatload of Bulls games this weekend. We got back-to-back tonight, the Pacers tonight, and then tomorrow night should be kind of an uphill battle, but focusing more on tonight's Pacers game, pretty excited. I think this Pacers team's a pretty good team, and we'll get our first crack at them at least. So coming off that Denver loss, I think the Bulls have a little bit more confidence in them, maybe more so than Monday night. But first, how are you doing?
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? Doing well. Looking forward to the weekend. As you said, we got a Bulls back-to-back tonight. Actually, I think it's the second week in a row. We had Friday, Saturday last week as well. And right. We got another double dose of Bulls on deck this weekend. So looking forward to that. We a big division game against the Pacers, who, you know, have not shot the ball all that well to start the season, but they've still been finding ways to win games. And I mean, heck, how about their most recent win the other day? The second coming of Arvydas Sabonis, his son Domantas Sabonis, putting up a 30-10 game. And then, of course, it was most improved player from last season and rising star Oladipo getting hitting the big three late to ice that game. And who could forget? Good old Dougie McBuckets coming back to the United Center on his fat new contract, just playing as member of the Indiana Pacers.
I don't know what the Bulls saw in him. I didn't even realize he was 27 years old already.
I was going to say, 44% shooting from behind the arc. There's good old Dougie.
Game, one assist, one rebound, and 0.3 steals on 44% shooting from three. I guess that's what you get $7 million a year for. But yeah, let's take a look at this Pacers team, because you know, I don't think their record does them as much justice as I think that this team is going to be this year. You know, we talked about them being one of the best teams in the East this year, following the footsteps of Victor Oladipo, investing in Miles Turner, and those guys, on top of some of their other bench pieces, and going forward with Nate McMillan, their coach. I would have to say that this team is going to be, if not better than they were last year, at least the same par. And 5-3 so far, I think, off to a little bit of a slow start. But led by Victor Oladipo, I guess my first question is, you know, it seems like it's coming every single night, is how do you stop filling the blank star? And tonight, the Bulls are going to have another tough task of stopping Victor Oladipo. So how do the Bulls do
that? I mean, they're going to have to try to contain him, and they're going to have to try to force him to make tough shots. Basically, if they let him get into the paint, then it's going to be a rough night. And I feel like, you know, the Bulls have not shown a great amount of ability to prevent the top guards that they've faced. Certainly, we saw it with not only Kemba Walker, but his backup, the ageless wonder, Tony Parker, in that blowout loss to Charlotte last Friday. this Bulls defense struggles against elite guards who can break teams down off the dribble and cause all sorts of chaos. With a Bulls team that has struggled with dealing with pick and roll situations, with drag screens, with switching, basically anything. And by the way, they can't get any rebounds to save their life either. So as far as containing Oladipo, I think it's trying to, in some cases, I want to suggest double teaming him in some cases, trying to trap him if he's the one bringing the ball up as opposed to Darren Collison in those moments, find moments where you can make Oladipo uncomfortable, try and force him to dribble too much, try and force him to dribble into corners. But the other half of my brain is scared of that idea, because if this Bulls defense tries something like that and tries to press, I feel like it will not be too hard for Oladipo to find the open man, or for the Pacers as a team to find the open man, because they're a pretty good team when it comes to moving the ball.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, to be concerned about is the defensive effort that they play with, too. The Pacers so far through eight games are fifth in defensive rating at 106.1. The one thing that I look at here that maybe the Bulls can take advantage of tonight is the Pacers are the worst team in the NBA as far as pace goes, 96.7. The Bulls aren't super ahead of the Pacers. They're ranked at 23, 99.5. Maybe the Bulls can get out to a start where they can try to just run the Pacers out of the gym tonight. And, maybe we'll see the Pacers trying to play a lot of half-court offense. And I think that's, outside of the transition defense, I think that's where the Bulls struggle the most. At least that's what I thought for preseason. And some of these games where teams want to play half-court offense, that's where the Bulls kind of struggle, is when they get put in sets. They're having to switch. They're having to deal with the pick and roll. So maybe it's something where the Bulls can kind of press the Pacers into taking shots and taking high volume shots early and try to run them off the court. I see that as probably the only way that the Bulls are going to hang around in this one. But they did a good job against the Denver Nuggets of forcing turnovers and kind of running up and down the floor with Nuggets too. So that's going to be something else to keep a key eye on. And also, the Pacers are not a great 3-point shooter. Look at their 3-point attempts. They are second worst in the NBA. They're shooting right now at a 3-point attempt rate, 25.9%. That's second worst in the league. So to stop the Pacers is to stop them at the rim, force them to shoot 3-pointers. And that could be a good or a bad thing for the Bulls.
So tonight, you're correct in the fact that the Pacers are tied for last in the league as far as number of 3-point shots per game that they take at 22.3. But they are second behind only the Golden State Warriors in the made percentage of those threes that they take at 41.6%. The Warriors, the GD stinking Warriors, with Steph and Clay lighting things up and breaking records and all that stuff like we saw on Monday, are at 41.8%, just a shade over. So Indiana doesn't take a lot of threes, but they hit a good percentage of the ones that they take, which to me screams a problem for the Bulls, because guess what? We're kind of having fun talking about all the different defensive problems this Bulls team has. One of the biggest ones so far has been not being able to contest shots that are being taken around the perimeter. So if these Pacers get open looks, they may be a bit more hesitant to take threes than other teams in the league. But if they get open looks, which clearly they will, because the Bulls give every team they face open looks around the perimeter, they'll knock a certain percentage of them down. We just mentioned our old pal Dougie McBuckets stroking them at 44% this season. Another key, of course, and I mentioned it briefly just a moment ago, is rebounding. Tonight, the Bulls actually have a chance to be a team that is better than their opponent when it comes to rebounding. The Pacers are actually one of the few teams worse than Chicago in rebounds per game. Chicago's pulling down 41.5 per rebounds per game. Indiana just 40.4. So maybe tonight is the night when the Bulls actually get some rebounds when they need to, because, you and I were talking on yesterday's pod, man, yeah, it stunk that Justin Holiday couldn't get that one box out that really cost them the game when Millsap got the putback for the Nuggets on Wednesday, but it's been a recurring problem all season long, and on Wednesday, they gave up 17 offensive rebounds to the Nuggets. The Bulls might actually be able to win the Battle of the Boards tonight, which would be a nice change of pace.
Yeah, the only one that's been pretty impressive as far as offensive rebounding for the Pacers go is Domantas Sabonis, which I would imagine he's coming off the bench tonight, which would probably put him in the camp of going up against Jabari Parker. If Jabari Parker doesn't start tonight, I don't know what Fred Hoiberg's going to decide to do. As far as matchups go, the Pacers decide to play a little bit smaller than most of the other teams in the league. So maybe you can get away with starting Chandler Hutchinson again tonight at the four up against guys like Thaddeus Young or Bogdanovich. Maybe you can get away with that. But I would be kind of shocked if Fred tries to go again with Jabari starting at the four, because it was a disaster on Wednesday night, and his main logic for doing that was just matchup play. And I think it's more favorable if he wants to get out and run fast tonight, run the Pacers off the floor, is to start Chandler Hutchinson. So I think that's going to be something to focus on too. But yeah, definitely, the efficiency that the Pacers have from the three-point line is bar none some of the best we've seen in the NBA so far. But it's, I think, if the Pacers are forcing shots early, I think continue to try and force them to shoot threes and keep up with the Bulls tonight. You know, the Bulls over the last couple of games haven't looked bad from the three-point line, and that's kept them in most games. Wednesday night we saw it. You know, the Bulls were shooting under 38% at halftime, but they were kept in by their three-point shooting. So some definite keys to tonight's game, but also I think I'm going to focus more so on the bench more than anything else for the Pacers, and that's Domantas Sabonis. You had mentioned that he had an outstanding night. He's had an outstanding start to the season off the bench, averaging almost 15 points per game, almost a double-double at 9.6 rebounds too. So he's going to be somebody I'm going to focus on, especially if Jabari's coming off with that second unit.
Speaking of bench players, just because this came across my timeline a couple minutes ago, worth mentioning, Denzel Valentine, this is from our friend Casey Johnson, has been cleared to up his activity. Still no timetable for his return. And also, another update, Hoiberg says Bulls will start the same way versus the Pacers tonight, which means, as far as bench players versus starters and who's who, we're getting another game with Jabari Parker in the starting unit tonight, Jordan. What do you think about that?
So I guess that they're going to go with Chandler Hutchison off the bench tonight. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of this, and maybe it's exactly the opposite of what I'm talking about. Maybe it's going to be easier for Jabari Parker to go up against a guy like Thaddeus Young at the four. Maybe be able to body him, maybe use him as an offensive weapon. I don't know, man. He's got to stay out of foul trouble, though. Like, that's why Fred took him out in the first 4 minutes of against the Nuggets. His bigger bodies were bodying Jabari Parker, forcing him to hack, and got him out of the game early. So I don't know if that's going to be a game plan of the Pacers, too, is seeing that Jabari Parker is going to start and try to go after him early and get him into foul trouble and force the Bulls to use a smaller lineup, which, you know, it hasn't really worked. I can't say it's worked successfully when they've started Parker, but maybe that's the angle that Fred's looking at. And, you know, a common theme with Fred, too, and he said this even last year, you know, when we were asking about rotations and why he was leaving guys in, you know, back-to-back-to-back-to-back starts or keeping the same rotations. Him and John Paxson have the same theory that, you know, allowing guys to stay in a certain spot for a handful of games instead of plugging one game and one game here, they've both kind of reiterated that same sentiment, not only last year when we were talking about, you know, why Zach LaVine was going night in and night out, why he was on a minutes restriction, and a few other guys that they were going with opposed to maybe allowing some of these younger players to start. So maybe that's what they're trying to play around with here is, you know, hey, let's try starting Jabari Parker and let's run him for three or four games until we actually have an evaluation of what he's going to be.
Well, yeah, and maybe, you know, give Jabari Parker some run so that he is forced to run so that maybe his conditioning improves a little bit. Because, you know, according to his boss, John Paxson, from that 670 interview just last week, he acknowledged that Jabari came to Chicago out of shape, came into training camp not in good conditioning. And what we've seen so far, we saw more of it on Wednesday night. Jabari dogging back on defense. I don't know how many times we have to sit here as Bulls fans and say, see the video evidence. There is the proof. It's not just us being mean to Jabari Parker. It is saying, hey, guy, the first thing you did when you showed up here was say they're not paying me to play defense, and there is video proof of you not giving a crap and not getting back on defense every single game that has been played. And even on Wednesday night, there was a gross play where Jabari just totally lost his man, didn't make any effort to get around his screen, and his guy just came waltzed through the paint for an easy dunk, and his teammate Campaign kind of looked at Jabari after the play to be like, yo, dude, like, what the heck? Guess what? Fred yanked Jabari right after that play happened. So show us something, Jabari. I know that little mini Jabari rant came out of nowhere, kind of, but you're talking about Jabari, so it's still on my mind. Hopefully he has a better start than Wednesday because he got into quick foul trouble and had to take a quick seat. I'm still hoping that maybe Jabari shows us something as a starter, proves to us in some way that he deserves to be a starter. That'd be dandy, certainly until Markkanen gets back. But guess what? He played like crap on Wednesday, especially showing more signs of not giving a crap on defense, and I hate that.
Last thing I got for you is looking over the Pacers' first eight games and some of their losses, some of their wins. You know, they've had a pretty tough schedule so far, too. you know, starting the season up against the Grizzlies, getting a win there. They battled against the Bucks, and who the Bucks have been red hot, except for last night. They struggled a little bit in Boston, but lost a game to the Bucks there. Beat a pretty decent Nets team so far. The Nets have stayed in almost every game they've played in this season. Lost to a Timberwolves team on the road. Was able to beat the Spurs on the road, which is also a good task, too, because that Spurs team has been pretty decent. Was able to knock off the Cavaliers and then battled against the Trailblazers in a 10-point loss there, and then be able to knock off the Knicks, who the Knicks were actually surprisingly being able to play the Pacers at a better pace than some of these other teams to start the season. But Pacers coming on the road now, playing in their third game this week, have the same exact schedule as the Bulls. Played Monday, played Wednesday, now coming into the United Center tonight. The Pacers don't play as well on the road as they do at home, so maybe that can help the Bulls out tonight. And the Bulls certainly play way better at home than they do on the road. And so, I don't know, maybe there's a challenge here. The Bulls can pull out a win against this Pacers team tonight, but it's going to come with repeat performances from not only Wendell Carter Jr., but from Zach LaVine. Like, those two guys are going to have to anchor this offense and keep this team in games. You know, I don't want to see Justin Holiday chucking up 11 to 15 shots again tonight.
You're not taking the Holiday over tonight, you're saying?
Oh, no, I'll wait about 2 weeks to do that again. You know, the heater comes once every 10 days to 2 weeks. So, yeah, I'm staying far away from his line tonight. But, yes.
That's fair. I am, just because you mentioned him, I am very much curious to see how Wendell Carter Jr. follows up his best game of his rookie season tonight against another tough defensive team like Indiana.
Gotta take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, I want to touch on the Rockets game on Saturday because we won't be able to preview that this weekend. I want to touch on that really quick and then spend the final segment talking about one former Chicago Bull had a hell of a night this week in Derrick Rose. So we'll touch on all of those. You can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Stay with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up 331-979-1369 on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, Instagram as well. Matt, just really quickly wanted to talk about the Rockets game too, following up this Pacers game. The Bulls having to play a back-to-back this weekend, getting the Pacers at home, also getting the Rockets at home. So having a home-and-home, nice to have that. This little mini home stretch that the Bulls have had. The Rockets have been off to a very disappointing start. You know, depending on what happens tonight, maybe a confidence boost with a potential win against the Pacers would help them going in against a struggling Rockets team. Like, look, they still have James Harden. They still have Chris Paul. They still have Clint Capella. All guys that can light it up from the three-point line. What's the keys for the Bulls and the Bulls-Rockets following tonight's game?
Well, if you look at, you know, what Houston has done to start the season, they have just been awful. It sounds like Harden is, again, doubtful to play tonight. They'll be on a second end of a back-to-back as well when the Bulls play the Rockets tomorrow. Harden's been out for the last couple of games with a sore hamstring, and they have certainly missed him. They are expected to get James Ennis back for their game tonight against Brooklyn. He's also been battling a hamstring. Melo has been inserted into the starting lineup in those guys' absence, and he is, I mean, God, Melo looks bad. I don't know what the Rockets were thinking when they brought him in. It's another ego in the locker room, and there's the whole coming off the bench and starting and that controversy. And I mean, this Rockets team is just some people are saying, you know, it's October, it's early November, chill. The Rockets will be fine. I don't know. I honestly don't know if they will be. You talk about just a huge impact of losing a guy who most people saw as just a role player. And it happened to the Rockets twice over with Trevor Ariza, a great 3-and-D wing, and Luka Mbamute. Like, I thought those, like, losing those two guys and replacing them with Melo, just a total kick to the crotch for this Rockets team. I'm not saying I'm super confident that the Bulls can win that game, but I see it as certainly more so of a winnable game than assuming that this year's Rockets were last year's Rockets, because they are very much not.
Yeah, you look at some of those key contributors from last year's team. You know, Eric Gordon, 23.4% from the three-point line. Like, that is awful. That is unheard of for an Eric Gordon who's been, you know, their three-point weapon off the bench, and he's gotten an opportunity to start here and there for the Rockets. Started four of the first six games for them. But yeah, man, you look across the board at the Rockets team stats and their opponents' team stats, it's night and day. Field goals attempted, the Rockets are second worst in the NBA. Field goal percentage, the Rockets are second worst in the NBA at 41.2%. You get their three-point percentage, they're 24th in the NBA. You get their two-point attempts, and they're finishing around the rim and finishing two-point attempts, 30th, last in the league. Their two-point percentage, 26th in the league. You know, you go across the board at any of these shooting numbers, the Rockets are awful. Their turnover percentage, second highest in the league per game so far with 13 turnovers per game. You know, and their scoring hasn't been great either. 105.8 points as a team, that's second worst in the NBA again. So the Bulls might be catching a stroke of luck here, and maybe I'm saying that and I don't want to jinx them. But getting a depleted Rockets team, an unorganized, a not, I don't know, just not together Rockets team at a perfect time where you catch them on the road, I think this might be something that, if not the Bulls pulling off an upset against the Rockets, at least look at the betting line and maybe take the Bulls points, because this Rockets team has just been hot garbage.
And the Bulls might actually be able to slow them down. You mentioned the fact that they've been struggling, just 105.8 points per game for the Rockets. And to me, like, the big key there is they also rank 25th in the league in assists per game. This is a team with very little ball movement. And, you know, certainly to a big extent, James Harden just goes and does his thing as one of the best ISO players in the game on the offensive side, and they've been missing him. But, you know, recently it's just like, okay, well, Carmelo's going to go to work for the elbow, and he's probably going to take a long two, and he's probably going to brick it. There is next to zero ball movement with this Houston team right now, which is good news for a Bulls team that gets so quickly and so easily lost against opponents that know how to move the ball and share the ball.
It's crazy, man. You know, I don't know what the Rockets were thinking, too, as far as their replacements for, like, Trevor Ariza, who they decided not to bring back. You know, you replaced it with guys like Michael Carter-Williams and Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris.
This Bulls team was like, nah, we don't need Michael Carter-Williams. Well, at first, they thought they did, and then they figured out that they didn't. So I don't know why the Rockets think they need him.
Yeah, the Bulls haven't been great as far as talent evaluators when it comes to the guard position. Let's just be honest about that one. How about Spencer Dinwiddie, man? Real quick.
Crushing it.
Unbelievable.
Totally crushing it.
Good for that guy, 25 years old too, and looking like one of the best guards in the Eastern Conference, at least right now, building off of
it. Wouldn't it be nice if he was our backup point guard, or, you know, in this stretch of Chris Dunn being hurt, our starting point guard?
I would say, man, he has made a case for himself to be a legit starting point guard. I saw Sam Vecenie, who does a lot of the college basketball stuff over at The Athletic. He's like, if I were a GM, I would be looking at Spencer Dinwiddie and giving this dude $15 or $16 million per season, because he's only 25 and he looks like one of the best guards in the Eastern Conference. So he's not wrong about that. He could probably start on this Bulls team and start probably over Chris Dunn. You know, he's been that good, and that good in closing games too. So back to the Rockets real quick, though. Wanted to mention that... you know, the Bulls love taking threes, and that's going to be something that's going to be continuing theme. The Rockets are giving up the most three-point attempts and the most three-point makes so far to their opponents through six games. While a lot of those teams aren't shooting the greatest, they're still in the top 15 as far as opponents go. Getting to the rack, taking twos, just shooting overall, opponents are next to none. There's no defense being played, and the Rockets have gotten lucky in some of these instances because the opponents have shot third worst combined in the NBA at 49%. So maybe the Bulls try and take an advantage of that on Saturday night, and maybe they can boost their ego a little bit by grabbing a win against this difficult Pacers team tonight. But yeah, man, they're going to have to stop James Harden, and let's not be the team that all of a sudden ignites this Rockets team, right? We've already had one embarrassing loss on Monday. Let's not make it two against two top Western Conference teams. So let's go out there and give them a fight like they did on Wednesday night against the Nuggets.
Yeah, and you know, if we'll see if Harden plays against us tomorrow night or not, but if he doesn't, I would certainly say if the Bulls walk away from this back-to-back with one victory, A victory against Houston is more likely than a victory against Indiana. Again, that kind of depends on whether or not Harden plays, but right now, Indiana looks like a better basketball team than the Rockets.
Gotta take another short break. When we come back, I'm going to finish up with Derrick Rose. Hit us up at 331-979-1369 on Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Be right back here on Locked On Bulls. Stay with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, 331-979-1369. Hit us up there. Heading into the weekend here, Bulls are playing back-to-back nights, Friday tonight, and then again tomorrow night too. Suggest maybe if you want to get out to a game, these two games, these two teams are pretty solid. If you weren't able to get out to Wednesday night's game, and you know, I have to backtrack a little bit. I was making fun of the Hornets for selling tickets as low as $2. Matt, Wednesday night, there were tickets available for that Piston or for the Nuggets Bulls game at the United Center for just $9.
No way. No.
Yeah, just $9.
No, that
it was.
Did you actually look into what that ticket? Because a lot of like, you know, secondhand ticket people will like say, "Oh, $9," and it's actually like a parking pass.
It was standing room only, but
okay.
But yeah, that's pretty crazy. I've never seen tickets for a Bulls game at that low of a price. And hey, it could just be somebody that couldn't go to the game, just trying to get rid of their tickets. But I was shocked by that. I was just looking at the ticket values and I was like, whoa, $9? I was like, that's like unheard of to try to get into a Bulls game
at the United Center for the Bulls or the Hawks. That's unheard of.
Seriously. So with that, maybe get out to a game this weekend, or if you're just going to pack it in and stay in this weekend, there's plenty of NBA action, plenty of Bulls action going on. You know, we go around the league now, Matt, and the one story we didn't hit on yesterday, and seems like it's been a polarizing topic, not only among Bulls fans, but just NBA fans in general. Derrick Rose dropping a career-high 50 points and having sort of a flashback vintage night, career-high 50 points. People forget, you know, he only scored in the 40s a couple times here with the Bulls and never to 50. So he got there in a start. Tom Thibodeau starting him with Jeff Teague being out in a performance that turned back the clock on Wednesday night.
It was awesome to see. You know, for all of the ways that he dealt with, you know, people in Chicago turning their backs on him, people saying, why aren't you playing when your doctors have cleared you to play, and all of the ways that people tore him to shreds for his lack of skill with dealing with the media, and all of those Derrick Rose foot and mouth moments that Bulls fans remember all too painfully, when really I thought it was a lot of fans yelling at him for being selfish with what he was saying in so many different, you know, examples, when really I just felt bad for a kid who clearly was not gifted as a public speaker and was not good with the media and never liked dealing with the media. And I always thought he was misunderstood in that sense, but I did feel like it was right for him to move on when the Bulls traded him. And I was worried about him in New York. I thought that city would eat him alive, and it did. It nearly did. I didn't think the Cavs experiment would work out. He gets traded, then gets dumped by Utah. And then, you know, late last season is like shooting at a random gym at like Cleveland State, waiting for a call to get on a team. Has a nice little run with the T-Wolves last season and has showed some really solid glimpses so far this season. The part to me that was rough about Wednesday night, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Jordan, was it was immediately a rush and a flood of Derrick Rose stans, Bulls fans here in Chicago, fans in Minnesota, just NBA fans and his fellow NBA players and former teammates or people just who have never even played with Rose before, saying, wow, so happy for this guy. Got through all of the things he went through, all the injuries, all the things that he faced. It is such a great moment. And then immediately the follow-up to that was, wait, hold on, timeout. This is the same Derrick Rose that got accused of rape, right? And then the conversation just devolved into monkeys throwing their feces at each other on Twitter, because that's what Twitter has become in certain ways. And I was just so frustrated by the amount of inaccurate stuff being thrown at either, whichever side of the debate people were on last night and on Wednesday night about what Derrick Rose was going through on and off the court. It makes me so mad how much inaccurate information was being thrown all over the place. What about you?
I agree with that. And the same thing with all the, I think the thing that bothered me about it, you know, I think you can be happy in the moment as a basketball fan. looking at Derrick Rose and everything that he's gone through on the floor as a basketball player. And I also can separate myself and be happy for him in that moment, but also remind myself about who Derrick Rose is and some of the things that have happened and have come out about him personally, you know, through the years. And I don't think that should be forgotten. And I thought, you know, the over-exaggeration of all these players coming out and tweeting at him and all of this stuff, and then it unraveled, like you had said, Twitter unraveled, the news unraveled, and there was I think I read close to 24 opinion pieces from a bunch of different news outlets about this and how to cover this and what to think about it. You know, it's tough. You know, as somebody who grew up here, watched Derrick Rose, watched him as a basketball player, I can appreciate that moment, but I'm allowing myself to just keep it in that moment. And, it, you know, the things that he's done, the things that he has said as a person, I still judge him for that, you know? And while a lot of people I thought took it to the next level, and even on the Timberwolves broadcast, man, I don't know if you heard that, and I'm not even going to play it here, but that wasn't the avenue that I thought this should go towards. And the Timberwolves broadcast guys did not do a great job after this ended, and I thought taking it an avenue I didn't like to see it go down. Overall, I'll say this. I can appreciate the moment and be happy for Derrick Rose in the moment, but outside of that moment, it is what it is, man. You know, I'm not going to root for somebody who hasn't had the best light on him as a person. So, you know, I just keep it in that, and I appreciate what he did here on the basketball floor for the Bulls, but I also have to keep in mind the type of person that he is off the floor.
Yeah, and I think that's what people were struggling with and have been struggling with over the last 48 hours or so since this great night and this great achievement he had on the floor is... Do you analyze it as part of his quote unquote comeback story? Is being found not liable in a civil suit where he and his buddies were accused of drugging and gang raping some woman? Is that a part of his comeback story? And you know, that's why so many people on Twitter were like, What are you talking about when you talk about Derrick Rose, you know, overcoming all this adversity? Are you lumping that in with his knee injuries? Because that's not right. That's not cool. And I agree with that. There is overcoming the injuries and the roadblocks that he has faced as an athlete. And there is Derrick Rose, the individual, Derrick Rose, the character, hopefully, I don't know, overcoming is the right word, learning from, growing from, bettering himself because of some of the stuff that he's endured off the court. And endured maybe not even the right word, because the things that he's endured, he's put on himself. But to me, the most frustrating part about this, Jordan, is that people are so sure that they know all the facts, regardless of whichever side they're on. Because there are certain people, you know, after this say, oh, yeah, let's all just forget that the guy's a rapist or that the guy was convicted of this and that. Okay, no. Study your facts before you open your stupid mouth. This was not a criminal suit. Derrick Rose was never charged nor convicted of anything. It was a civil suit in which he was found not liable. And so the Rose stands coming to his aid saying, well, he was found innocent or, you know, he was all charges were dropped or all this, all that. He was found not guilty. No, that's not true either. Regardless of which side of this fence you're on, hurling rocks at the other people who either want to support Derrick Rose or tear Derrick Rose down, at least study the information. It's public information. It was public information when the civil suit was happening 2 years ago. I've read pretty much every single document in that Rose case because I really wanted to know what was going on. And guess what? There is an appeal coming from his accuser later this month. So that is another part of this story, and the story is not over. But for NBA Twitter people, and for the most part, we love NBA Twitter. It is a wonderful place filled with a lot of love for people who love this league so much. But the Derrick Rose stuff drove me crazy. Because if you want to take a side on whether or not Derrick Rose's personal life and the issues he's faced off the court are or should not be a part of the conversation of Derrick Rose turn backs the clock with a 50-point performance. Wherever you are on that spectrum, at least get the facts right. Because that is the part that was really pissing me off. People either defending Rose or hurling insults at him and trying to tear him down who were just clearly not informed on what happened and what is happening. So again, one of my favorite things to say when I'm just frustrated with people, educate yourself before you open your mouth. That is my big takeaway from that.
I couldn't have put it any better than you did. That was exactly how I felt. And I felt uncomfortable, you know, kind of talking about this. And it should be that way. You know, the way that people perceive Rose, my look at it is, you know, there is so many other guys around this league that can get the same praise that Derrick Rose has gotten throughout his entire career, his highs and his lows as a basketball player, not talking about the person, but also talking about the person too. Combining those two, there are hundreds of guys in this league that you can root for that are clean, that have clean records, you know, and the facts, let the facts play out. I was just going to mention too, the fact that there is an appeal coming to this case. And, you know, I think there was a lot of other opinion pieces out there talking about this and how to feel and not sure how to celebrate this. And you can be in the moment, but at the same time, realize the type of person that you're kind of celebrating. I was just frustrated too. And I think it goes to your overall theme too, is both sides of the extreme just hurling accusations and things that are not factually true at each other. And then you've got people kind of in the middle. They're like, yes, I can appreciate this moment, but I also realize who Rose is and what he's gone through as a personal person. And that has me conflicted morally. So I think that's where I sit too. And I don't want to spend a whole shit ton of time on it either. Because number one, I know a lot of people love him here in Chicago, and he will always forever be loved here in Chicago by the people in the city. But at the same time, he doesn't play here anymore. And, you know, I feel uncomfortable about it. And I don't know how to feel after something like this happens. And then the overexplosion on Twitter of all the reaction, I think that bothered me the most, is the players. The common tweet was like, everything you've gone through, all the adversity you've fought and more. I've seen a lot of people add the "and more" part of that, and I'm like, come on, man. And that, yeah, on top of the Timberwolves broadcast, was like, seriously?
Yeah.
So all of that just, I don't know, it left a bad taste in my mouth. And like I said before, I can appreciate the moment for Derrick Rose as the basketball player, but I'm going to leave it in that moment and not spend a whole rest of my life defending one side or the other. You know, I know who he is, and I can have my opinion and you can have yours. But I totally agree with you. The hurling of incorrect information at each other all over Twitter, that's a common theme of our entire lives, though, right?
Yes.
Now, is the misrepresentation of facts.
Yeah, it really is the most frustrating part about it. And just really quickly, you know, in case there are some people saying, well, you know, standing up there on your pedestal, tiptoeing this fence, you know, which side are you on? Because I was just, you know, expressing my frustration with the inaccuracies of people hurling insults and accusations from either side. Look, to me, I'm with you, like, it's morally conflicting. And it's very, like, you know, as much as I've read over all the documents of everything that was, you know, put forth as evidence and all of the quotes that came from that courtroom when things happened, I believe that the, you know, the not liable decision that, you know, for at least until this appeal comes later this month, essentially relieved Derrick of any wrongdoing. I think it was the correct one. Based on all of the evidence we saw from the accuser's friend saying things that certainly were not stories matching up. We heard that the accuser was also deleting evidence on her phone about talking about setting Derrick up for something like this and taking him to court for something like this. And was the accuser was found to be not credible. And look, I am not, you know, before you say, oh, you're totally okay with rape and domestic violence. No, no. Clearly, there are some things that Derrick Rose and his friends did that were very troublesome and definitely deserving of criticism. I mean, and it goes back to the Derrick Rose word vomit that Bulls fans know all too well. Him saying things like, well, we men, when talking about, like, why are you even, you know, gangbanging with your bros in the first place? Well, we men, that's how we act. Awful. Oh, my God. Just stop talking. Or when he could, the worst to me was Derrick Rose not being able to define what consent meant. And that was the biggest worry of, oh my gosh, maybe Derrick Rose is actually guilty of raping this woman. Because how do you know you have consent if you don't know what consent is? That and many other things that we learned when that civil suit was unfolding were very troubling. As someone who always wanted Derrick Rose, the kid from Chicago, to be someone who could remain a hero in our eyes, even if he had become a fallen hero on the court. I am very curious to see where this appeal goes, because it's like, we kind of left that civil suit saying, okay, so Derrick Rose found not liable, but certainly a lot of icky things were learned about what Derrick and his buddies were doing at the time. And even if it wasn't that they drugged and raped this woman, they did some very questionable things. Legally, it sounded like, if there was not actually proof and evidence that they drugged and raped this woman, which it seemed like there was not, then they still were doing things that are not high character things, but in fact the opposite. So it is, like you said, it's morally conflicting, especially because I think it would be so much easier had it been an actual criminal trial. Because you say, okay, well, that's the verdict, and the verdict is the verdict, and here's the evidence, and that's the verdict. But now we have a second go-round coming with this appeal from his accuser, and we'll see if anything we learn that's new. But yes, you can absolutely be happy for what Derrick Rose accomplished as an athlete on Wednesday night and still take issue with some of the things we learned about his character a couple of years ago.
The not knowing consent thing, that always sticks with me. That has sticked with me for a long time.
Awful.
And I think that's why I've been hesitant about talking about Rose and, you know, the praise that he gets across the city and everything else. You know, that still sticks with me. That sticks with me with any athletes. And that's why I just go back to the fact that, you know, all the time and the energy that's spent into Derrick Rose, you know, could be spent into another guy that is completely clean, that, you know, has the ideals and the morals and also is a really good basketball player. Because at the end of the day, we're all humans here. And really is scoring 50 points in a night more important than some of these other things? I don't think so. And I don't know. It's just, it's always something that I'll think about and always attach with Derrick Rose, no matter the outcome of the trial, no matter the outcome of the civil suits, all of that. And I think the common theme I think we're coming back to is the fact that the hurling of misinformation on Twitter, the exposing other people because they're not on one side of the fence or the other, and all of that to me has made the situation weird, and I think it's made it uncomfortable, and that's what it should be. But that's something that's always going to stick with me, is the whole not knowing consent, and that goes back to when he was here with the Bulls. Like, I know a lot of people in sports radio and sports media that feel the same way, you know, that one time, that comments will always stick with Derrick Rose. So I don't know. I think that's the last I want to talk about this until we get any other further news or there's anything else of mention to hit on. But I think overall I can say I can appreciate the moment Derrick Rose had on Wednesday night, but I'm also going to leave it at just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. And however you feel about that moment and how it should be cataloged and categorized into who Derrick Rose is as an athlete and a person, I beg of you, if you want to have this conversation with other basketball fans on Twitter and on social media, do your homework and make sure that you have the facts right before making all sorts of claims as if you know the facts, when in fact what you're saying is incorrect. Because that was the most frustrating part about that to me, is people just hurling completely inaccurate stuff all over the place. And as you said, it's not just a problem in basketball and NBA Twitter right now. It's a big problem in our country right now. And it's frustrating when you have to deal with it. And it's frustrating that it kind of ruined what you know was a fun moment in time for a guy that used to mean a lot to sports fans in Chicago.
If you've got reaction, you want to give your opinion and your thoughts, hit us up at 331-979-1369 on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls, or on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Got two Bulls games tonight, Pacers and Bulls at home, and then the Rockets tomorrow night. Should be a whole lot of fun, Matt. Let's hope we don't get embarrassed like we did Monday night against the Rockets. Like I said, my biggest key to the game is containing the Rockets. Let's not let them start getting together as their chemistry starts to form. Let's not be that team that sets them up to start on a run. Let's just not be that team on Saturday nights. And let's have a good game against the Pacers. Excited to see what Wendell Carter Jr. does up against Miles Turner, and Zach LaVine going up against Victor Oladipo. So this should be a really fun matchup. Fun for me tonight too, man. I love Victor Oladipo. I've said it before. Got a special place in my heart for the IU guys out there. So Victor Oladipo, always going to be one of my guys. And how about, Noah Vonleh killing it with the Knicks right now. So excited to see those guys doing well. And college basketball starting up next week, Matt. So maybe we'll have to get a college basketball analyst or two on to preview the season, because I know a lot of Bulls fans, if this is the way that this season's going to start to direct that way, and maybe we're looking back at the lottery again, maybe we'll have to be interested in watching college basketball this season. So we'll grab one or two people next week to preview the entire college basketball landscape and some of the NBA prospects. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.